You are listening to Fantha Tracks.
Because of the following special program, Wonder Woman and the Incredible Hulk will not be presented this evening.
Time to get all your Star Wars news in a single file. This is Making Tracks. Here are your hosts, Mark Newbold and Mark Mulcaster.
It's not true. That's impossible.
You're listening to Making Tracks. I'm your co-host, Mark Newbold, and joining me today is a man who, if they made a live-action Star Wars film featuring the 1995 Kenner action figures, this dude would be wicked. Mark, how you doing?
I was expecting you to say monkey face Princess Leia, but yeah, I'm good, man. How are you?
Very well, very well. Looking forward to chatting Star Wars. Loads to talk about today. First, John Boyega, the potential for him to return as Finn has been brought up in a recent interview with Daisy Ridley. She was asked whether or not she would like to see John return. That is above my pay grade. I would love to see that, but that is not a decision for me. So Daisy thinks it would be kind of cool if Boyega came back as Finn and he was a Jedi that was teased and hinted at slightly in the first two films, but certainly more in The Rise of Skywalker. So first question for the day, what do you think, Mark? Do you think there's the, well, obviously there's the potential, but do you think Boyega would be interested? Because he has been kind of a bit reticent to get into Star Wars of late. Do you think that if they gave him a really good, interesting storyline that he would want to come back? And secondly, do you want to see that?
So does that really good and interesting storyline also include like seven figures for a fee? Because I think that's probably part of it.
You're probably right.
I think so. It would be cool. I really liked Finn as a character. I kind of liked his kind of naivety. And so it would be quite nice to kind of see a little bit more of an awakened Finn. The question I have is, and maybe it's like similar lines to like, say, Sabine, even Dear Old Amiga, everybody's got midichlorians in them. It all comes down to the training or the lack of training, but also, I guess, the like raw ability. It'd be quite fun for him to be like a bit of a Jedi squib, you know, somebody who's can maybe like move a remote with their mind, but that's about it. And maybe Daisy and him, he's been trained by her, Matt, because they had great chemistry, did they not?
Yes.
I mean, I thought, babe, you know, from Force Awakens, or even before the Force Awakens, when we saw more press junkets and stuff, there was a good energy. So if they can capture that again and develop that and bring that into like a different place, I'm all for that.
If they want to go down this path, they've certainly teased it enough in the sense that when they decided to make Leia powerful in the Force very openly, physically, they'd kind of hinted at it with her sensing Luke in Empire Strikes Back. So you've got something to call back to. With Finn, I think he's already had a mate, not that a character only needs one arc, but he's had a redemption arc in that he was a First Order Stormtrooper. And they kind of walked it back a little bit so that he was forced into being a Stormtrooper, whereas in the old days you were enlisted because people didn't know better. The galaxy was kind of being hoodwinked, but nevertheless people did it and became Stormtroopers and served and drunk the Kool-Aid, however you want to put it. But they made it so that Finn and when you got to Janna in Rise of Skywalker were kind of stolen as kids, like the Jedi were stolen as kids. If they want him to be a leader, like Poe's a leader, Poe's Wedge Antilles of that trilogy, but he's also moving up the ranks. So you're seeing him, you were kind of seeing him progress in a way that you maybe didn't see Wedge progress in the OT because he was a more minor character. But by the time you get further down the line, certainly in Legends, you saw him progress up that chain of command. I think with Finn, they've hinted at it. If that's what it takes to get Boyega back, but by the same token, he seemed to really respond very positively to the Colin Trevorrow Duel of the Fate script. So he liked the thought of Finn being a revolutionary leader almost. You saw that picture of him at the front, you know, with the flag and the whole leading the charge. That doesn't necessarily mean he has to be a Jedi. If they've got a good story, if Finn is the mace to raise Yoda, if she's head of the Jedi Council at that time, however they word it, and he's like the Mace Windu, who's like the next one down, because obviously she picked it up so quick, it was in her DNA, if you like, it was in her blood, literally. If that's the structure, and like you say, the banter between the two actors and the characters was so light and easy, you know, it might not be so formal as it was with the prequel trilogy, and it could be interesting.
with that in mind, I mean, one of the themes that we're going to see more of, especially like with the Ahsoka series, the whole message that they were trying to push in the sequel trilogy, that is basically everybody has the ability to be a Jedi. Maybe, again, we could see a Force using Finn or a Force using Sabine or whoever, but doesn't necessarily come under the quote-unquote Jedi of old. And that would be quite fun, would be to see perhaps like a galaxy that's a little bit kind of out of control, not like it's like a dumpster fire, but basically there's just people running around. They could be like con men, actually using the Force just for their own little schemes and scams and stuff. Finn, like some guy sat on the sofa, can't be bothered to move, so he just reaches out for the Force and just grabs his remote. So suddenly we've kind of seen that democratization of Force usage, which has been so suppressed in the Galactic Order, come to fruition. And that could then create some interesting avenues that we could take some of these characters. And you might even have, say, like Rey going, no, you can't do it like this because this is what the books say. And everybody else is like, yeah, shut up, Rey. We want to do this or we want to do that. And we want to try and see if we can move ships with our minds and stuff and make things float.
You'd want to police it, waggle the air quotes. You want to police it from a moral point of view, wouldn't you? Because lazy people just, you know, opening doors. I mean, we do that with doors, don't we? You know, you could have people in the galaxy doing all these slightly shady things if they've got a talent for it. Yeah. So the structure of Jedi, Sith, whatever, would there be Padawans in Rey's Academy? Would there be Knights? How would she delineate? You know, she might want to stick to the old scripts, but maybe it's looser than that. Could be very interesting.
And like you said, with policing it, again, you've got that term Force Inquisitor slightly on its head. And maybe they are slightly more benign and slightly more altruistic. Yeah. But actually, they are the ones who are going around educating people where it's like, so you're a Force user. Doesn't mean that you need to try and rule the galaxy with a wave of your hand. Because I guess that's the thing. Like, if suddenly there's an awakening across the whole galaxy, which is kind of, I think, part of that underlying theme of like the sequel trilogy, it's basically the same as like if you suddenly legalize LSD or marijuana, you'd have to educate people to try and get them to understand. But actually, yeah, okay, fine, you can take it. It's legal now. However, there's still a responsibility and a moral obligation that you need to society to maintain that. Yeah. So there's some interesting things that they could do with it. And hopefully it'll be great if we can see John Boyega in the thick of it all.
Hi, this is Ethan Sachs, writer of Bounty Hunters, and you're listening to Fanthatrax.
So we're just a few weeks away from the debut season of The Acolyte, and speaking in a recent interview, Leslie Headland did mention a number of things, but one of the things she said was she thought that they could make a second season of The Acolyte pretty quickly. She actually says, we definitely have a timeline. I have a lot of ideas, and again, a lot of it was stuff that I told Kathleen early on in terms of where I would like the season to go and the conflicts that I see happening, specifically in the second season. But I have been working nonstop on this for a very long time, so I'm definitely taking a much-needed break before we get the writer's room going. So she's kind of already talking about writer's room, seeding stuff for the second season, talking to Kathleen Kennedy. There has been some kickback already just on the trailer. The show's not out. No one's really seen anything. Mm-hmm. We had an insane amount of replies on a Fanthatrax post that showed the Hasbro figures coming out, vintage and black series, of the Jedi characters. Jedi wear brown robes, have lightsabers. There's a general genericness to the look. So there is a sort of a formality and a look to them. And if you're into the High Republic, it's a little bit more ornate, a little bit more detailed. But the criticism that we were reading on our thread was ridiculous. A lot of people that viewed it on YouTube were giving it a thumbs down as opposed to a thumbs up. It was a really out of balance in that sense. But in terms of talking about a second season, do you think Leslie's putting the cart before the horse a little bit? Or do you think this shows Lucasfilm's confidence that they might have just landed on something really, really good?
This is the creative director, the person who came up with the story, kind of basically saying, oh, we could do a second season, which, you know, she's not confirming there's been a second season greenlit. In fact, it might be some time. These days, it would be slightly sensible of Lucasfilm and Disney in a wider reach to kind of say, well, let's see how this gets received before we go and make any knee-jerk reactions and saying, all right, second season's on its way. So what that means is, to me anyway, is that we're probably going to get 8 episodes, and by the end of our 8 episodes, we're probably not going to get a cliffhanger. I think it sounds like it could just be like a story that's wrapped up in itself, but at the same time, obviously the characters and some themes will be able to be picked up and developed and then moved on to a second season. The thing is, when you're coming up with something as complex and as complicated and visually as ornate as a Star Wars story, a lot of the work and a lot of time and the effort goes into the design of the characters, and but also, you know, the world building. And we are slightly in a new era that we haven't seen on screen before. So therefore, there's probably a lot of developmental time went into that. So therefore, you've got that visual language set up. It's probably quite an easy step to then maybe move that forward without it feeling like it needs to be a lot of work. It's kind of why episodic TV, you know, once it's up and running, tends to run itself pretty well and pretty easy, because, you know, the situations and the characters are there, and, you know, it's easier to kind of move stories along with that in mind. So I think it's a fair point. I don't think she's kind of brimming too much with overconfidence about the actual series. I think it's just more of a case of saying, hey, you know, I've got more ideas. So, hey, Kathy, talk to me.
You get the Mandalorian come out, and yeah. Grogu is the breakout character of Mandalorian. You get the Force Awakens come out, and BB-8's the breakout character of that film. And so in modern Star Wars, it kind of feels like a bit like Young Jedi Adventures. You've got Nubs. You've got a standout character and a relatable or attachable character that sort of breaks out of it. But when we were kids and Star Wars Empire and Jedi were the thing,
yeah,
everything seemed to connect, didn't it? Wicket and the Ewoks connected. Yoda connected in Empire. The vehicles of Star Wars and the archetypal characters connected. So now if you got the coolest ship designed for the Acolyte that, mm-hmm. that just looks pristine and everyone thinks he's fantastic, it's not going to sell a million toys, because the days of the Millennium Falcon being the coolest, you know what I'm saying? It's difficult to pitch that different. Now. I can't foresee it.
The world, as it were, has moved on. And partly that's just down to the nature and the evolution of like society. Kids these days, yes, they are buying toys, but they're not buying toys in as great numbers. And to be fair, the people who are buying toys are people who had toys when they were kids. And that's kind of, you kind of see slight pivots in the industry with Hasbro and that towards that in certain genres, you know, G.I. Joe, Transformers, Star Wars. They're really appealing to the kids who were the kids back when the figures first kind of came out in that kind of first 10, you know, 15 year kind of era. So that's different. And also, like, hey, what the hell? You know, look what happened to the Razor Crest. We had the Razor Crest and then they blew it up and everybody got excited and everybody sold them. I sold mine, yeah. You sold yours, you know. Yeah. And I think the thing is, this will sound worse than it's meant to sound. George said, dare to be cute. You can have cute characters and stars. It doesn't need to be all dark and broody and moody like Empire Strikes Back. And I think the cuter characters, at least from my observations, from my perspective, have probably appealed more to female fans. For Baby Yodas, you have a Baby Yoda on our like Rebel Legion stand, and you generally get people fawning over him. And the same is for BB-8. BB-8's kind of cute. It's like, oh, isn't he cute? So the marketability seems to be more with that. And I think also that resonating in a more profound way, because really, yes, there's been female Star Wars fans all this time, but they haven't been so vocal and so prevalent as they are now, which is fantastic. But I think you see that some of the marketing and maybe some of the toyetic items that are coming out are slightly more cutesy. There wasn't really anything like that, barring the Loth Cat in Ahsoka. Look at Book of Boba Fett. Wasn't really anything. Vivi Lara Blair, absolutely adorable on screen. But there's not really been any, you know, Little Princess Leia merchandise out there at all. I can't really put my finger on as to what it is or isn't that is kind of driving this. But it's obviously yet to be seen if we're going to see Nubs or somebody as cool and awesome as he is in Leslie Headland's Acolyte.
One other quick thing that occurs to me, when we got to the end of season 2 of Ahsoka, when we got to the end of season 1 of Ahsoka, they clearly knew they were going to do a season 2 of Ahsoka, but they kept us waiting for a little bit. And there was that sort of, the fandom felt like it was left hanging a bit because mm-hmm. obviously we'd had the real life situation where, oh God, was he actually played Baylan?
Oh, fuck. Oh, that's not his name. 2 seconds.
I've just gone blank on his name. That's terrible. That's right.
Yeah.
That's terrible. I can see him.
Yeah. Ray Stevenson.
Thank you very much. We had the real life situation where Ray Stevenson passed away. And so there was uncertainty about what would happen with Baylan. And just on a broader sense, we just didn't know what was going to happen because mm-hmm. our characters are left in Peridia on the other side of a different galaxy and so on and so forth. And then a few weeks later, they announced the season 2. Do you think if the Acolyte does do well, and we won't know until it's out if it's doing well. But if the Acolyte's doing well, do you think they should at the end of season one go come back for season two? Let us know sooner. Let not keep us hanging. Push on with it.
Yeah, I think if it really kind of resonates with people, and I think that like the first episode of Mandalorian or the Mandalorian season one, for example, is probably that slight lightning in the bottle, really, yeah, to an extent. So it doesn't need to be like up there with that. But I think if they're happy with what they're seeing and the confidence and the general vibe, because as you say, Star Wars is as polarized, if not as, you know, more polarized than like American politics these days. And sure, therefore, you can't listen to extremes. You kind of got to try and listen to the middle. And if a general gist is actually this is really cool, then do it. I also wonder whether or not there was a delay in announcing Ahsoka, and forgive me if I'm wrong, but just partly because of a writer's strike as well. True.
That definitely played a part.
You know, that must have played a part, and it must have, we saw that there wasn't any real promotion. I know they were kind of hoping the fan sites would do as much as they could, which, Fan for Tracks did, went way above and beyond, as we always do. However, like, it still doesn't beat actually seeing like Rosario Dawson on like Good Morning America. And so I'm sure we'll be hit over the head, I think, with the Acolyte promotionally going forward.
For everything in one location, daily news, reviews, interviews, podcasts, video and social media feeds, bookmark FanthaTracks.com for Star Wars news 24/7, 365.
So it's a topic we've spoke about a number of times here on Making Tracks, but we're here again. Ewan McGregor has made it very, very clear that he would like to return as Obi-Wan Kenobi in some form or format. Not quite sure what that's going to be, but speaking to Lad Bible, he did touch upon it. He said, "There's been no phone call to me from Lucasfilm or Disney saying, let's do another one. Obi-Wan was made as a limited series. It's out and people like it, which I'm very, very pleased about. I love doing it. I hope we get a chance to do another one, and I'm sure we will. I'm pretty sure I've got a few years yet before I'm the same age as Alec Guinness was in A New Hope, so there's time to tell more stories in there." So he makes it very clear, and he's quite right. I should know his age because it's exactly the same as mine, that he's about 10 years younger than Alec Guinness was when he made A New Hope. So there is, as he says, plenty of time. And even in galactic time, we're still a decade away from A New Hope. So he's right. There is time to tell more stories. The Blu-ray, DVD, 4K Ultra of Obi-Wan Kenobi is coming out. They've marked it up as the complete series, not season one. They've just marked it as the complete series. So it would seem that Obi-Wan Kenobi as a title is a done and dusted deal. But my question to you, Mark, is do you think we will see Ewan back? But more importantly, if we do, where do you think we'll see him?
He could be all over the place, really, couldn't he? It's a shame they're not going to do another Kenobi series, or at least maybe not in that guise. But then maybe we see him in Andor season two, or could he possibly pop up in Ahsoka as a Force Ghost flashback? There's that possibility. So there's loads of different options. And there's probably like 20,000 that people are screaming, saying, "Oh, yeah, but you could do this and this. If he's keen, let's get him out and let's do it." Because I think we can't get enough of Obi-Wan.
They brought Hayden back very neatly for Obi-Wan, and then really effectively for Ahsoka. Now you've got Hayden back, and you've got Ewan, who is keen now and outwardly, almost without prompt, saying, "I'd love to do it again." After years and years, at one point he'd done it, he was done with it, it was finished, and there wasn't going to be any more. It's not like, "I want to do it, but they won't make any more." He was just away from it. And then it seems from things that he'd said that it had been sort of brought to him and mentioned. And so he was keeping it on the down low for quite a long time. Mm. And then it gets announced and then he makes it. It comes out. It's a hit. And now he's the one that's saying, "Hey, yeah, that was great. I'd love to do more of this." It's not like he's not a really busy actor. He's not short of work. He's working with his wife in A Gentleman in Moscow on Paramount Plus. So he's got stuff going on. So an actor of his prominence to want to do it, please let him do more.
Of an own goal if they don't really. I mean, I tell you what would be quite fun, and I think you'd do it, let's do it as a ultra limited, maybe like 3 or 4 parter, just do it as a like a Disney Plus streaming feature. Let's do a live action Clone Wars with Hayden and with Ewan. That would be so cool. But the characters are there, right? They're all there. They could do it. if I wanted to.
Prove, though, that those flashbacks, those memories, you know, the fifth episode of Ahsoka when she's in The World Between Worlds, that worked. The scene in Kenobi when they're doing the sparring, that worked. The Ariana Greenblatt stuff worked. The potential's there, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I think they, like, with the World Between Worlds stuff, they just about got away with pulling off the what little bits of, like, the Clone Wars that you saw, because it was all very shrouded in fog and smoke and mist and very atmospheric, man, and kind of works.
Battlefield stuff.
Very battlefieldy and stuff, which, actually, to be fair, like, you remember those scenes from, like, Attack of Clones and Geonosis, where it's just like dust everywhere, you know, so they could do it. But that did feel a bit, like, for me, a little bit small and a little bit small budget. But I think, you know, so they'd have to step it up a little bit. We're not talking about, like, really going to, like, 250 million. You know, I think you could find a happy medium. Maybe from both of them, for lack of a better term, a bit of a redemption if they get a script which they connect with and they can act in a way that they feel like they're actually being able to deliver, basically trying to say, with an actual actor's director rather than perhaps a more kind of visual director like George Lucas was. That could be quite interesting. Get something super emotive out there, you know, up there with, like, what we see at, you know, the end of Revenge of the Sith.
That's a fair comment, because the end of Kenobi, the last, I watched it again a couple of weeks ago and enjoyed it way more. I mean, not that I didn't enjoy it on first viewing, but you're kind of watching it because you're reviewing it and we're talking about it.
Yeah.
But to just sit and watch it with no filter, just watch it, let it come to me, really enjoyed it. And that the final scene, the fight, you know, you can feel his heartbroken, Kenobi's voice is breaking, it's all there. And then the return to Alderaan, the scene with young Leia at the end, when he tells how much like her mother and her father that she is and the qualities that she's got. Just brilliantly done. So I think you're absolutely right. And I don't think that's not detrimental comment towards Lucas, because George always hired the actors to be the rock.
Yeah.
I think Liam Neeson said that, you know, the direction he got was minimal because George was like, well, I've hired you to play this character, so play the character.
Yeah, exactly.
A lot of actors dream of being given that much latitude and scope. So, and then George just takes, just 30 takes and takes to what he wants, you know, he's paying for it. That makes sense. But what you say is completely right. If they did do something, maybe nearer Revenge of the Sith than Attack of the Clones, that the back of that 3-year stretch. But if they could do something, I mean, we know technically they can do it as a TV movie, like you say, if they want to go down that avenue. They kind of said they don't want to do TV movies, but like a special, you know, maybe more of a special than a movie. You can phrase these things, they can work around these things.
You know, you've got limited series, right? Which is
that's right. If you're having Ewan back after the events of Kenobi in that 10-year stretch to A New Hope, now they've made it clear, and I know a lot of people aren't happy that he leaves Tatooine. I've got no issue whatsoever that he leaves Tatooine. I think it's more than explainable.
Yeah.
Do you think they should? Do you think they will?
I mean, maybe they kind of thought, well, actually, we got as close as we could to jumping the shark with Kenobi. And, you know, he meets young Leia, so that kind of strengthens that slight relationship. And then also you've got the stuff with Luke, which I think was probably the biggest dubious question over the whole series. Just that whole little kind of like end bit. It kind of sounds cool when somebody's explaining it to you, but then when you see it visually, I just don't think it necessarily worked. It's a little bit too convenient. Hey, there's possibilities and stuff, but maybe that's the thing. Maybe they're kind of going, well, look, we will use Ewan again when there's the right time or the right vehicle or the right reason to. And maybe they're thinking, a bit like they did with the like the legacy characters, that actually let's not stick them out on everything, because then it stops being an event, you know. And you think about how big an event it was when we saw Hayden in Ahsoka. If we get, like I said, maybe an episode of Ahsoka with Ewan or something else, that's quite a big draw. Maybe they're thinking, well, let's try and find new and interesting ways to use this character rather than just the crazy old hermit we are all used to.
We've got Ahsoka that can flash back to previous events.
Yeah,
we've got Solo that had Maul in it that's moving forward through the timeline that maybe will return to elements of that Crimson Dawn in the Lando movie. Mm-hmm. So there is the potential, if you want to show the Darth Maul demise at the hands of Obi-Wan Kenobi, that these characters, well, you imagine getting Ray Park and Ewan McGregor back together on screen for that. We saw it in animation in Rebels. You know, the opening episodes of The Bad Batch retold things that happened in the Kanan comic. So we can go back and retell certain things. Can you imagine if they did a flashback with Ewan as an old grey-haired Kenobi taking out Darth Maul as we see him in Rebels? So there's definitely potential to do stuff. Just knowing that Ewan's keen to do it, I think, is
that's
quite exciting.
Hello, this is Mark Thompson. I narrate a bunch of the Star Wars audiobooks, and you're listening to Fanthatrax.
Do or do not. There is no try.
We've got a listener's question, and it's from our ever-dependable pal, Skyhawker. And the question is, hi, guys. I think he's talking to us. As we know, the trailer for the Echo Hut series was recently released. From the reports I've seen, this trailer has almost three times the negative down thumbs on YouTube compared to the positive up thumbs. Do you think this is because of the actual content of the trailer, or more likely that viewers have been burned by previous disappointing Star Wars series and now have no confidence in Lucasfilm? Cheers, Skyhawker. So, he's not missing his words there. He's being very plain and clear. Do you think that the negative reaction is because the vocal fans don't like what they've had before? Or do you think they're seeing what they're seeing in the trailer and thinking, this ain't for me, and they're voting with their thumbs and giving it a thumbs down? Which way around do you think it is at the moment?
Well, yeah. I mean, so the Acolyte trailer, to this point, has had 9.5 million views. And I know that, like, at least only 10 of those are probably me and you. And I, you know, and I gave it a thumbs up. I thought it was all right. But then maybe that's just because there are some Star Wars fans who have got much higher standards than I have, which is fine, you know. Or do I dare say it? Maybe there's other people who have got ulterior like motives for down thumbing stuff because they're actually a little bit worried that what we're going to receive is going to be something that they're not going to like, so therefore get ahead of it and create a negative kind of vibe before it even is released, which just makes no sense to me. If you count yourself a Star Wars fan, would you then want a Star Wars show, be it a film or a series, to fail? It makes no sense. Surely as a Star Wars fan, you are meant to be enjoying Star Wars, not enjoying it. And I get it. I'm not saying because you're a Star Wars fan, you need to like everything to do with Star Wars, because I don't think I like everything to do with Star Wars. But I wouldn't want to say, nah, that looks crap straight away, and either say I'm going to boycott it or say I'm just going to basically just negatively malign it. Because what does that get you? All that does is that it gets you riled up and in your own little echo chamber with all your mates who are probably saying the same kind of stuff, feeling very important and like you've agreed with the whole internet, when really you're probably only agreeing with maybe 0.01%.
It says something about the fan in this instance.
Yeah.
How they approach not just Star Wars, but probably all sorts of media, because I go into all these things wanting to like it. If I don't like it, you know, generally I'm a fan of that. If we don't like it, we don't tend to say too much about it. You know that it's not our favorite thing, but we're not going to harp on about it and bash it, because God knows we're not paying the mortgage with this stuff. Consumers is a horrible word, but we kind of are. It's an ancillary thing that if we like the show, we'll buy the toys, and it is a business. So it does all play into itself. So I guess in a way we are consumers, but also because we do this and we do the site and we go to conventions, we're closer to it than most. But I think the point is that generally us and most people that we sort of in our circle are going into it thinking, I want to enjoy it. Now, don't get me wrong, there are a few that saw the Acolyte trailer and straight away turned their nose up. I'm not going to say who, but I know people who just did not light them up at all. But most of them that I spoke to, by their own admission, said, but I've only seen the trailer. If you judged the Phantom Menace, for example, on the trailer, that would have been the greatest movie in all of history, because that was one of the greatest trailers that's ever
Absolutely.
Been compiled. So
Absolutely.
You can't judge a show by its trailer. It's difficult to really put too much heft and weight behind the thumbs up, thumbs down, because like you say, I think it's almost become a societal thing. It's become a thing that people like to bleat and moan. The fact that there's people like us who may or may not be a little bit more chill about it, I personally just tune out to that. And if people want to explain their opinions, positive or negative, great. Just if blanket thumbs down, it's like, that's so boring.
Very easy to hide behind your keyboard, to hide behind an avatar and write some of the best, you know, most witty, snarky comments and that. However, I mean, I'll be honest, we see that in the costuming community all the time. You know, I'm not talking about like one club or another. It's like all the clubs have, you know, it attracts certain people like that. However, you have an argument, or, you know, sometimes there have been like full on blown out arguments on the forums, but yet you see them face to face and you challenge them about it, and 9 times out of 10, they can't back it up. You know, and I'm not talking about like physically, I'm talking about verbally. You know, I've said the same about, say, like The Last Jedi. If somebody can turn around and actually accurately pinpoint what it is they didn't like about that film or any of the other films, then you kind of go, okay, that's fair enough. That's your opinion.
Yeah.
I'm not here to sway your opinion. This is what I saw from that same scene or that same film, and we're different. That's sometimes good. The Acolyte, I mean, both me and you have consumed and read and what have you, a lot of High Republic stuff. So we're kind of a little bit more versed with it. Now, the High Republic as a book publishing program, which has been the most ambitious since really the New Jedi Order, in fairness, you could say probably even more because they didn't rely on legacy characters. It's the kind of thing that not everybody has seen. And so there are some people who have literally fell off their chairs, and I saw some maybe slightly staged reaction videos. That's what they've been waiting for, because somebody said in a press conference many, many moons ago, oh, Acolyte, it's kind of High Republic. Those fans are kind of going, oh my God, it's amazing. So they're seeing the absolute positive. And then maybe it's people who either tried to read The High Republic and didn't get on with it, or just went, oh no, it's a load of white nonsense, whatever. They've been automatically turned off by that. But the thing is, we know what happens. A lot of people will probably watch it and they'll probably go, that's all right. The trailer was cool, but it didn't blow me away. But that might actually be my age now, because like Star Wars doesn't very rarely kind of blow me the way it did when I was 15, 20 years younger. Going back to that Phantom Menace trailer, that was the greatest thing and probably is still arguably one of the best trailers anybody has ever cut together. We do have high standards, but yeah, you know, we can see the good and the bad in most things.
I just wonder, you say something there that's really got me thinking about how in days past you get more excited. When you're a kid, of course you get excited. You get excited by the milkman turning up when you're a kid. But now... You know, the last time I got really excited and like really emotional watching Star Wars probably was Force Awakens, because seeing the trailer for the first thing we'd seen for so long, that really got to me. And there has been moments in films and in TV episodes that have got to me in a positive way that have got me quite emotional watching it, you know, because I'm invested. So there has been that. But I just wonder now that we've had all this television, so I'm sitting on my sofa and I'm looking at my telly, and I'm comfortable and I'm drinking a cup of tea and I'm watching brand new Star Wars sometimes every week. How am I going to feel when the Daisy film comes out? And you just mentioned the New Jedi Order books. I think the era that the Daisy film is set in is also called the New Jedi Order. You're going in to see a new Star Wars film now. All of us have seen a lot of Star Wars since we saw The Rise of Skywalker. I just wonder how excited, how much it's going to grab us, how nostalgic it's going to feel, because Star Wars isn't the circus coming to town every 3 years anymore. It's...
Yeah, almost every week. Think about it. What got bums on seats for The Force Awakens was the nostalgia. The marketing team at Lucasfilm and Disney knocked it right out of the park. When it came to, you know, nailing down a like the zeitgeist feeling of what a new Star Wars film was going to mean to certain people, they nailed it. So you can only do that once in a generation. And so like they've got to think about other stuff. There's always a trepidation, isn't it? I think trepidation is a good word. You go into a new era of Star Wars and everybody's a little bit like, ooh, how's this going to like line up to my headcanon? And the visuals, are they going to be what I expect them to be? And if there's a hierarchy, like the films are top tier and then the TV is that slightly lower tier, because we have four or five in our house and we just sit down and we watch it and we just consume it, and you don't pay it there the same credence as like when you go to like, you know, the cinema, to the IMAX or like a Cineworld super screen or something, and you just kind of go, holy hell, this is amazing on a big screen, because it's still an event and Star Wars should always be an event. It doesn't matter if it comes out weekly or annually or once every blue moon, it should be an event. Awesome. So another fantastic question there by Mr. Skywalker. Keep them coming, sir, because otherwise who else is going to ask the questions? That is all we have time for this week. If you want to ask a question or a thought or a theory or comment, Mr. Newbold can tell you how you can get in touch and send it through.
Yes, I can. Yeah. Sit down, kids, because there's loads to tell you, and this is how you can do it.
Visit FanthaTrax.com or be sure to comment, like, and share on our social media feeds at FanthaTrax. Send in your listeners' questions by emailing radio@FanthaTrax.com. Subscribe, leave a review, preferably a 5-star one, on Amazon Music, Audible, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your podcatcher or smart speaker of choice. And as always, thanks to James Temple for composing the FanthaTrax intro, Adam O'Brien for our making tracks opening music, and Mark Daniel and Vanessa Marshall for our voiceovers. Tune in to Good Morning Tatooine. It's live Sunday evenings, 9 o'clock UK, 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific, on Facebook, YouTube, and Twitch. And check out our FanthaTrax Radio Friday Night Rotation every Friday at 7 o'clock UK time for new episodes of The Phantom from Down Under, Planet Layer, Desert Planet Discs, Start Your Engines, Collecting Tracks, Cannon Fodder, and special episodes of Making Tracks, and every Tuesday at 7 o'clock UK time for your weekly episode of Making Tracks. And remember, FanthaTrax.com, our social media feeds, FanthaTrax TV and FanthaTrax Radio are absolutely free! So no Patreon, Buy Me a Coffee, Kickstarter or Indiegogo required to stay updated on all the latest Star Wars news.
And that's me done for this episode.
Awesome. Thank you very much, dude. It's been good fun. Everybody stay safe. Take care. Have a wonderful Star Wars week, whatever that means to you. And until then, may the Force be with you.
Coming up next on Fanta Tracks Radio, it's Start Your Engines.